we both have a mutual friend that I went to middle school with in New York. She told me that she was new to the school and that me and my best friend at the time kind of came up to her. We're like, come and sit with us or whatever. And we're like, let's be friends, but we're witches.
This is Pod Crushed,
the podcast that takes the sting out of rejection, one crushing middle school story at a time.
And where guests share their teenage memories, both meaningful and mortifying.
And we're your hosts. I'm Nava, a former middle school director.
I'm Sophie, a former fifth grade teacher.
And I'm Penn, a middle school dropout. We're just three Baha'is who are living in Brooklyn,
wanting to make stuff together with a particular fondness for awkward nostalgia.
Well, I struggle with nostalgia. I'm here for the therapy. Okay, so here's what I've got. Here's what I've got. Are you listening?
We're waiting with bated breath for you to do this intro, Ben.
Well, don't bait it. All right.
Remember when Penn was like, hey guys, we just need a half hour for this, right?
I
like
laughed. Tops.
I wanted to put LOL.
Hello. Thank you for tapping on your phone, scratching at your screen. Thank you for, can anybody listen to this on a computer? Anyway. Welcome to Pod Crushed. This is our very first episode. So to kick us off, I called on a dear old friend of mine. So I actually forgot how much we'd been through together. Her name is Leighton Meester. You know her best from our time sharing the screen together in a little project called Hella Burger, right? It's a classic cult horror. No? No, sorry. Oh, you're thinking about Gossip Girl?
Oh, well. Sophie here. And like the listener, I watched Gossip Girl when I was in seventh grade, right when it came out. So doing this episode was wild for me, you guys. Sitting next to Leighton Meester and Penn Badgley.
Hang on, though. You do every episode with me, so.
I know. I've kind of gotten used to you, but sitting next to Leighton Meester was wild for me. She was super down to earth, though. Very chill. And
the subtext of saying that Leighton is down to earth is that I'm not. She's like, oh God, it was so amazing to be around Leighton.
To finally
like,
meet a down-to-earth celebrity.
And it's just like, she's a celebrity, but like she wasn't, first of all, she was early with a go up at the end.
And you are at once very down-to-earth and also like
late.
Way up in the heavens. Like, in like the celestial realm.
Okay, that's fair.
We were super late to the studio. We showed up like maybe half an hour to 45 minutes after her. And Nava, you know, took a few wrong turns driving us there.
Just like four.
Introduce yourself, Nava.
Hello, Nava Kavlin. Cannot drive. Do not know my left from right. But I'm usually on
also
time.
Also never late.
Well, she's what you would expect from a former middle school director.
But a middle school director who can't drive. Yes. We're going to start this episode how we'll start every episode, with a real-life middle school story submitted by a listener and narrated by Penn. I'm so excited for this episode. Today's story came to us by way of a young woman in Texas, and it's personally my favorite story because I feel like it's the archetype of something that could only happen in middle school. The choices that this young girl makes, you would only make when you are not a child, not an adult, and really don't know what to do with yourself.
The only other context in which this behavior would be justified?
At a bar? Drunkenness?
The only other circumstance where this behavior would be justified is actually in a life or death situation. It's like actually, you know, where the stakes are so high.
I feel like this story almost seems like it was written as part of a movie. There's like a building climax and you think you're at the climax, but you're not. And it just gets worse and
which
worse.
Which is the sign of a great climax.
Yeah.
You know, you get the fake out.
You know.
It's like a good script.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong.
Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
In 2017, I set foot in the public school world for the first time in my life. You see, up until that point, I'd been homeschooled. Like eat lunch with your mom every day, homeschooled. What drove my parents to the decision that eighth grade was the right time to throw me into the layer of miscreants that is middle school, I'll never know, but it wasn't all bad. Because that was the year I met Cam. Cam was my first crush. 4 months in, and I had a full-blown infatuation. So one day, my friend Sarah and I were hanging out at a park in my neighborhood in Austin, Texas, when we spot Cam walking over. Now, before we go any further, it's very important that you remember that I was homeschooled 4 years before these fleeting few months of eighth grade. I had no experience with boys or crushes. So, okay, back to Cam. He began approaching us. I began freaking out. My palms were getting clammy and my fight or flight instincts were kicking in. So I did what any 13-year-old girl in my position would do. Run and hide inside a small tunnel on the playground floor. Phew. Close one, right? Well, except he saw me. Cam saw me. So Cam started walking over. I saw him coming. Did I pretend I was searching for something on the ground? No. Did I stand up and play it off like I meant to crawl into this tunnel? No. Did I do anything sane or rational? No. I just let him come. Find me. Like that. Cam approached. I remained crouched. You know I can see you, right? He glanced down at me. I was mortified. This was my chance to recover, though, right? Laugh it off, play it cool, ha ha, just a little friendly hide and seek. No, naturally, I did no such thing. Instead, I stayed inside the tunnel with my head down, wordless, just waiting for Cam to go away. He stared at me. I stared at the ground. He walked away. Finally, Sarah, you remember my friend Sarah? Yeah, so she, embarrassed for me, came over and she dragged me out of the tunnel and marched me over to Cam, insisting that I say hi like a normal human being. But I was seized with so much fear, and see, this is where the story really begins, that as she was pulling me over towards him, I pretended to have a heart attack and die. Yes, that is right. I, 13 years old, preferred to collapse onto the gravel and pretend to die rather than say hello to my crush. Cam and Sarah said nothing. They simply walked away, leaving me to collect my thoughts. And there, a few moments passed, maybe a few minutes passed, maybe a star died, I don't know, I'm not sure, but I managed to regain some semblance of self-control. I picked myself up and I walked over to them. Oh, hey, oh, Cam, hey, I didn't even know you were here, what a coincidence. Cam, he smiled and was actually pretty cool about it. I gotta go play basketball. Nice seeing you today, he said, and he ran off. I reached out to Cam about a year later to say hi, and, you know, weirdly, he still remembered the whole me playing dead thing. I guess I had to learn a classic life lesson in the most embarrassing way possible. While it may be romantic to die for love, it's never cool to play dead in front of your crush.
I know Cam.
Yeah. Everybody knows Cam.
Cam seems nice.
Cam was nice. I feel like he handled it really well. Yeah.
You know, I love Cam.
I relate to that whole, whole thing.
Did you have, I mean, this is where, you know, people often say to me, well, often is probably an overstatement. I think when you're in a position such as mine or yours, people love to make assumptions as though you've not experienced awkwardness and that kind of thing. And, you know, for me, I actually was like a painful amount of it. Do you remember a lot of awkwardness? Like, what was what was that time like?
I mean, to me, the it is never ended.
Actually, yes, that's it right there. That's, I agree.
And to me, the like life itself and every social interaction and otherwise, like every like work interaction, romantic interaction, friend interaction, is just one endless hangover of what was I what did I say and like ruminating and like replaying what happened.
Really,
with acting as well, like I'll replay every scene I've ever done and been like, oh, this is how I could have played it. So it's never quite ended.
It's interesting, when we were prepping for this, I was saying like, I want to ask Leighton if she's ever had like an awkward or embarrassing crush story, but she seems like someone who's like so together and so elegant. Like, I can't imagine her having that experience. That's literally
I think
what
that was
I
smell again
on the word elegant. Yeah.
Well, I do remember I had a few really good best girlfriends, and there were boys around, but they were so in the periphery of my like best girlfriends. And every like first kiss was with a girl. Every like first at, like showing each other, talking about our bodies, just all of that. It seemed very like, you know, sorority. And then I moved to New York and I went to a school that was really small. And I can't say that I had a crush on anyone, but I do remember playing Spin the Bottle and participating up until the point where I was going to kiss somebody. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I wanted to spin. And maybe there was somebody that I was like fascinated with, wanted to kiss, but I never wanted to actually go through with
it. Wait, you wanted to spin? Like you just literally wanted to spin the physical bottle? Like you just wanted that?
I think like I wanted to be part of like the cool, like I thought that it was cool that we were all together doing it. And like, assuming that I've blocked out a lot of this time, and now you're forcing me to remember, but like, like what was middle school like? I'm like, I don't
know.
Podcast over. Yeah.
It is funny. It's like, I mean, I don't spend much time thinking about that time, and I wonder why. I think it was the most formative period, truly, and it was so. It was definitely the beginning of like realizing a lot about the adults in my life and how much I did not trust them. And realizing a lot about like, certainly about my own body, but just sort of like also hating it. And also like, it's the time where you are starting to like maybe be attracted to people other than, you know,
yourself.
I don't know, human, other than yourself. And also yourself.
Which is its own thing.
I'm not judging that. But then also, it's like your worst time where you're like, you know, do I start shaving my legs and like wearing mascara? Or I don't know, all the ways that like you can be insecure suddenly start like you get zits and you're like disgusting. And zits aren't disgusting, but just you feel that way.
Yeah,
and
you
like
do.
The embarrassment of being 13 is enough. It's so embarrassing to be 13. Yeah. Yes.
It's just, I'm imagining just somebody standing and just being like, just every moment, everything.
Pen is twitching for those who can't see.
It's horrible. I remember a 13 year old. Yeah.
You couldn't tell, Nava, but.
I remember someone asking me how old I was and just being so ashamed to be like,
can't even say it.
13.
You can't finish the word. Yeah. Like,
well, like also, you know, there's no way of hiding that you're 13. Like you might think that they, like if you look at a 13-year-old, and even nowadays, like there's a lot of jokes about like they're not young people where you're like, they don't look that age.
No.
It was so terrible for us when we were that age. Like, we, you know, our fat, like the fashion of the 2000s is like all horrible.
Mm.
And now they're just so put together and they have like
they all
YouTube
wear Crocs.
And TikToks to like do their brows well. Mm. And like they're all like more mature.
I was thinking about this recently because I was watching a show of these two huge TikTok stars, and one of their friends in the show, someone was asking her, like, why is your like, all you and your friends, you're so well behaved, like, you're so put together. And she was saying, yeah, it's because we have this, like,
third person watching us. Everyone has a phone. Anyone could whip out whatever recording device they have and like take a picture, take a video. It lives on the internet forever. And so we've internalized this like being in our head.
God.
Yeah, except not as like forgiving as God. The public on TikTok is not as forgiving.
Well, see, I mean, it's like if we're becoming more and more image conscious as a mm-hmm. culture, mm-hmm. and I even remember, I mean, at 12 years old, it's just like you have this idea of what you're supposed to look like, which is represented by a couple of people.
Right.
You guys.
You know? Yeah.
That's what we're supposed to look like.
No, it's true.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. Well, now I've been stopped in my.
Yeah, sorry. So I can't.
I feel so much shame. It's like the weight.
You can't help your bone structure, Ben.
It's helped me. What was I saying? I don't know. I just completely.
There's like one or two people you're supposed to look like.
Yeah, well, and I think regardless of what you look like, you're even for the first time being like. It matters what I look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, because as a child, you just don't have that awareness. Like, it's just not possible.
I think it depends. I think you're absorbing it, especially young girls probably do absorb, like, you know, I'm supposed to look like Barbie or a princess. Certainly that, like, grow up, get married, have kids, like that sort of, even not just your looks, but sort of what your trajectory is in life.
Yeah.
And I have, like, a weird combo. I feel like, lots of self like loathing and criticism that it's like been since I was a child from all different sources. And then also this sense of like, is it body dysmorphia to be like, damn, I look good. Like all the time. Like even when I'm sure that I don't, like I have, it's, and I think that it is from some sort of like extended childhood of being an actor and being able to play and continue playing. I remember when Barbies were done, like no one was playing with Barbies anymore except for a few select friends. And I wanted to play so bad still. And it was over. It was like, well, that's done. And all the Barbies that you've collected in the little world that you've made, it's done. Like, we're not doing that anymore. Now what you're getting for your birthday is like nail polish and makeup.
That's so interesting.
And diaries, you know, and that kind of thing.
That's interesting on a couple of levels. But do you feel like, because you were acting, which I was also at that age, do you feel as though some of that time, I guess in retrospect, was like taken from you? Is that kind of part of what you were saying? Or am I just imagining that?
No, that's
not
projection.
Do you want your childhood back? I think we should talk about this.
I'm feeling this way.
Nowadays, I feel like a big old kid that I get to like go to work and it is fun and it is like, God, don't we just get to be like teenagers forever, you know, in that way. But as a kid, it is not the environment for professional workplace is not, you know, the right environment for a child at all.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think I'm still constantly coming to terms with what an unusual circumstance being not just an actor, but like a professional working actor. And so in a way, I think what I keep coming up against is how all of those insecurities that we have, which we end up discovering are unwarranted and magnified. Being an actor, it's almost like all of those things are validated. You know, it's like every insecurity you have about your body, either someone who's seen you on camera has mentioned it in a comment somewhere, or you do transform. You do lose weight, or you get taller, or you work out, or you buy
get
the
taller.
Thing. Well, from that age. I mean, not in your 20s.
Whoa. I was like, where did it? How?
I'm still growing.
Yeah. I have a doctor.
Still growing, still going. And like, you know, if you do, then you realize I don't feel an atom of difference. I still feel the way that I felt, which there's something about this time, too, when you're like, you're just like, what is this body? Like, my body.
Well, and also what you're saying, there's two different aspects to being an actor. Certainly, like, as an adult, there's a different, like, expectation. And I think in many ways, like, we get to, I think, have very little responsibility except for our own selves on set. You know, like, what are our lines? What are our characters? Process that. Like, that's fun to me. And then when you're a kid, and what you are getting, like, applauded for on set is for how grown up you are.
Yeah.
How responsible and how professional. And that's really this whole other expectation that is not really right to put on a kid, no matter what, you know, like, oh, look what a grown up you are. Mm. Like, that's something that I still, you know, if I ever do have issues with anything, whether it's on set or otherwise in life, I have a fear of like complaining and being like troubled at all. Yeah.
I wonder for you guys, because me, I'm not an actor, but I can think back to middle school and also elementary school, just childhood. And like, I can pinpoint a few comments that just like my whole world then was centered on that comment. Even people who loved me, like my sister, I remember she was like, you know, Sophie, if you tense your stomach, one day you'll have abs. Like if you just throughout your life, just tense your stomach. I remember thinking about that constantly. Like I would catch myself and be like, oh, gotta tense it. Like one day I'll have abs that way. And it's on one level when you're experiencing that from like friends and family or like classmates. But I'm wondering, were you guys young enough when you started to have that also from like the public to hear those things? Any comments that like got to you and have like stayed with you?
Not as a middle schooler, but I do remember having all kinds of stuff. Like I remember my cousins who are a few years older than me saying that my freckles, like I'm going to need to fade them. They told me to use buttermilk. And now I'm looking back going, was that a trick? But I remember being like, I need buttermilk. We need to buy buttermilk from the store, getting buttermilk, putting it on like a washcloth and just like keeping it on my face and being like ashamed of freckles.
Wow.
Which I had no control over.
See that? Yeah. Thank you for I have control over my freckles, but I don't know what kind of freckles you got. That's just this idea that you can even become ashamed about, because you're not one of those people who's covered in freckles. Like there are people who have a lot of freckles, which I also think can be really beautiful. It's like, it's just, I'm, you know, neither way do I really care. But
freckles are actually really in right now.
Are they?
Yeah. People fake freckles.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm out. It's too much. It's too many things all at once. I know.
But isn't it such an annoying like age that we've like come to where we're like, these kids drawing their freckles on when I was a kid. Yeah. Freckles. Why to fake my freckles and cover them? Yeah, it's just like,
it is
that feeling of being like, I'm getting older. I mean, and truly like being a woman too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Penn, you're part of this.
Yeah, I can relate.
Honorary woman.
But like as you get older, specifically like once you're married and have kids as a woman in our business, my viable love interest in a movie is 50.
Oh, that's terrible, Leighton. That's so upsetting.
I can't, like, I was really, we were playing this game the other night, like scrolling through movies and going, what's that guy's age? What's that girl's age? And and let's start at 15 years of difference.
Yeah.
And,
terrible.
You know, I was doing a show for the last couple of years and playing a mom. And if I truly was the mother of this child, I would have been a very young, I would have had him when I was like 20, which also is part of the story and it's totally fair. And they're like, you know, you're turning 30 on the show. And so I'm like, okay, that's a couple years younger than my actual age, which is fair. And then they're like, we need you to cover up those grays. Mm. And I'm like, wow, no, I don't want to. This is the actual age. This is actually what someone who has like a 10, 11, 12-year-old, like this is somebody who's like a few grays in their hair, but we want you to just look younger, just a little younger. Things like that.
This is where I develop, I have a powerful disdain for our industry. And it's, you know, it's mores. And when I hear that, I'm just like, I wouldn't even say it makes me angry. It makes me be like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You are morally bankrupt.
Yeah.
End it. Well, also, stop it.
It doesn't just have an effect just on you, Leighton.
It's cultural.
Although it does.
Huge cultural ripple effects.
It has a huge effect on the world. Yeah. And that's the crazy part. It's like,
yeah. And I mean, that's minor. That's minor. And I mean, far be it from me because I had enough, like, whatever. It's not even inner strength. It was just me being like, no, I don't really want to put cover. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to do that. And then being like, no, you're right. That's fine.
Yeah.
It adds dimension. It's good. But it's sort of like highlights. But having that, like most people, you know, in all walks of life, like, yeah, that is what is more, we get more attention, more applause for being like young and whatever. But yeah, no, you're right. It has a ripple effect.
I just this weekend did a presentation on the impacts of media on society and in particular like girls and boys. And so I had done a lot of research. And I think a lot of it also comes down to like all of this machinery is profit making. And it's there's like advertising is like trying to mold our consciousness in a particular way. Mm-hmm. So if you keep people obsessed with their youth, they'll continue to spend money on products that they don't need to look something that they're never going to look because they mm-hmm. are actually aging. Mm-hmm. So I think it's also like a fear tactic to get you to spend your money. And mm-hmm. and it sort of like diverts all of your time and all of your attention to something that doesn't matter. And it's just a ploy to get you to spend money. And it's a very deliberate ploy. Like it's very calculated. And there are people who have given like lots of thought to how do you keep people insecure so that they'll buy our products. So it's also just so sad because it's so wasteful and it has real impacts on people. Like people truly feel people like I'm not part of them. I feel it too. You feel sad. You feel insecure. You feel like you're not enough. Men your own age aren't interested in you. They're looking at someone 10 years younger. You know, it has devastating consequences, and it's all to feed the capitalist machine to get you to spend your money.
And I'd say on the typically male side of things, you actually, the second you're aware of all of this, you know, your body starts changing, your awareness starts changing, all you want to do is be older. Because mm-hmm. because even at 12 and 13, that age gap starts to be impressed upon us all. Like, you know, you keep thinking you need to be older because then the girls your age will like you.
That's so funny.
And even, I would say, at my age now working, I'm trying to think of like the right way to say this. Like, if there's a woman my age cast, I know I won't be cast opposite her. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. that's a bummer. Like, I'm just like, oh, no, no. It's like if I know the female role
she's
is already
playing your
out.
Mom.
Does somebody? Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Yeah. Like, I'm like, I'm old enough to play Timothée Chalamet's mom. Oh. And I'm
that's
not
the
even.
Point we've reached.
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We both have a mutual friend that I went to middle school with in New York.
Davida!
Yeah, Davida. So she told me that she was new to the school and that me and my best friend at the time kind of came up to her. We're like, come and sit with us or whatever. And we're like, let's be friends, but we're witches.
That's amazing.
That's exactly what I would want it to be.
I love that.
And we're like, if you're going to be friends with us, you have to be a witch too.
So do you remember this?
I mean, I remember being a witch.
Have you seen the show Pen 15?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
have you seen the episode where there are witches?
This is all
I'm thinking about.
And I'm like, I can't believe what a universal experience that was as like a 13-year-old. We would do spells. I don't know about what, really. My one friend to this day says that she did a spell to make her hair curly.
And it worked.
And her hair is curly now.
Wait, she still says this. She maintains this now.
We're 35 years old. Cool. And she's like, remember when we did that spell and we had to get whatever ingredients and we had to substitute some stuff with like dish soap? And we did spells. We would light candles and, wow. and do spells.
I think Gen Z would call this manifesting. Yeah. She manifested her curly hair.
It's playing. Yeah. I mean, you're continuing the play, but I think it's different now. And I think that like what we're giving to young girls is different. But a lot of the play was like, we're getting married or we're, there is that game. It's you're a princess and you're getting married and, you know, or you're in high school, certainly is the end all be all, or you're in college or whatever. So maybe that it is the like superhero equivalent for like a young girl who's out of like dolls, you know?
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting because boys it's almost like boys have the freedom to think magically up until that point. And then it's sort of like, all right, now you got to turn that into some real world, everyday masculine sort of power. And then it sounds like, I guess girls are thinking about their power maybe in a different way, which is cool. I like that idea.
Well, it's being stripped from us in many ways. Like you said, like I remember being like hollered at walking down the street from a car when I was like 14, you know, and being like, what was that about? And not fully understanding it, you know. But just, you know, suddenly it's like, well, then you're, you know, slowly becoming more like of an object. Mm-hmm. And then once you're 18, game's on, you know.
Yeah.
And that's horrifying.
Or game's over.
Game's over, I suppose, in some circles.
Now you're just progressing towards being too old.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever good enough. I remember being 13 and being like, when I'm 16, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And we do watch a lot of like movies. And now, funny enough, anything that's centered around teenagers, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Show me some grown-ups. But when we're kids, we're watching just teenagers. Yeah, and that's what our whole world is.
Yeah.
That is, I'm going to drop a bomb here. I'm going to reference the show we were on together. It's what everybody came here for. I remember being 20 and being like, why does everyone care what these teenagers are doing? Everybody's thinking so much about what teenagers are doing in their relationships. And if you really think about the kind of dramatic episodes that these or any real teenagers would be doing, emulating it or having similar experiences, it's like you're literally creating something out of nothing. There's a miscommunication over texting, right? Between a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old. Okay, this is what millions
later,
of people
boil it down for us. Like,
we literally are talking about something that could be, I don't know, solved by autocorrect now. Seriously. And you're telling me that's something that everybody wants to watch and is like, oh, it's so salacious. There's so much happening. It's like, there's nothing happening. There's actually like,
it's inconsequential. It's,
and you know, and that's, I wouldn't say that's unique to actually any show that we've been on. That is drama. That is like what we think about when we talk about drama.
Yeah.
And I know that for me, when I was about 20, 21, 22, 35, into my 40s, I'm just kind of like, why is this the thing? Why? Like, what is it about this? And, well, that's that.
People don't share that sentiment, Ben. I mean, it's funny. The most annoying advice that I give to my 22-year-old sister constantly, which she asks for and then never follows, fair. But what would you do? What do you do if your best friend's boyfriend says this? Or what do I do about my, you know, whatever in school or my apartment? And I'm like, this is so annoying, but like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't. And I know that like, that it does to you right now. That this person said this or whatever, like, don't get involved. Stay home if you want. And I'm like, the most annoying thing is being told by an older person that what you're going through, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And I'm not saying that what I don't agree 100% with what you just said as well, but I'm agreeing with my own advice as well. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You're 22. What do you want to do with your time? Don't get involved in that. I don't know. Just read and like learn an instrument and like study a language and spend time with your friends and like better yourself and don't get involved in the like minutia. Just don't. It's not worth it. You're not going to think about it later.
What you're saying is essentially true. And I think it's getting down into the cellular experience of anyone when they're in pain. In the moment, the fact that you're having that experience, the fact that it matters so much to you, is the thing that you that shapes you, is the sort of emotional and chemical experience that does shape you as you grow. And even though you can know years later it doesn't matter, you're still laughing and cringing about it and writing a story. You know what I mean? It's like it's still, it sticks. And I think somehow, even though I am, you know, probably far too prone to like casually dismissing an entire generation's like interest in a particular drama, even when I talk to my stepson who's 12, I have to catch myself because like I'm not his dad is very much in his life, so I am this other role, this always evolving like other parental figure, sometimes very friendly, sometimes very brotherly, sometimes very parental. I have to catch myself from like not dismissing his cares, you know, because sometimes they will be. It's like we're talking about a shoe. Like that's what we're actually talking about. We're talking about.
I remember when I was 16, my whole family like labeled me as like boy crazy. That was my password in middle school, like boy crazy 99 or something. And I was just like obsessed. I had so many crushes and the feeling of my whole family was kind of like, Sophie, just move on. Like, it's not that important. You're so young. Nothing's actually real. Nothing's going to happen. And this girl who's actually now my sister-in-law, she married my brother, but before they were ever together, when I was first meeting her, I sat down with her for something else and she sat down and immediately was like, so tell me about boys. And I was just like, oh my God. And it was like, huge. And she,
that's,
I think,
so
like
funny.
It was almost like, not, she wasn't doing it in a tricking way, but it makes me think like, how do we as adults then do that for younger people, like get on their level and be like, yeah, I totally get it, tell me everything, and then like mold them and guide them, like,
that's so sweet.
It's actually not that important, but like you have to be able to acknowledge it with them first.
Yeah, so we've come full circle. Their shit doesn't matter to let's validate this whole generation and make them feel worthy.
The first step, it sounds to me like, is listening, you know. It's like, and that's what I feel like I didn't have a lot at this age. I didn't have a lot of people really listening. I don't know that I felt like I had anybody listening, to be honest. You know, I don't think that the boomer generation really knew how to listen to a 12-year-old. I don't think that was like cultivated in them. Their parents were like, I went to war. You go to school, have a drink, you know, like that's the extent of, it was like, you're not dead.
Yeah. Something I was going to say, and we can cut this, but because now we're going back to Gossip Girl. But I do remember.
I do want to bring up Gossip Girl.
Well, no, because I think it was like an extension of what we're talking about. So like I was 20 when I started that show and doing like, you know, fittings for lingerie, right? And like, okay, so we're going to do this scene and you're going to be changing
first
in front
episode,
of a.
Right?
I think every episode. I mean,
so
many
like
sexual
like,
fantasies.
It was like right away. It was like,
right.
You know,
I mean, I was,
right,
yes, absolutely. So. I'm 20 years old at the time, doing scenes of not just like having like sex or like, you know, sexual like fantasy stuff and then like in a bed with someone or whatever. We were 20. So whoever was looking at it, certainly like girls that were actually 16, I was playing a 16-year-old. They're watching it thinking that is what a 16-year-old looks like.
Yeah,
and right
now,
I'm watching a 16-year-old have sex. I'm watching a 16-year-old in lingerie and their body. But actually, it's not a 16-year-old. It's a 20-year-old, but my brain is being told that it's a 16-year-old. Yeah. So that, like, kind of messes with me, too.
Completely.
Absolutely.
This is what I mean. Is like if we actually put 15- and 16-year-olds in these, like, teen shows and movies that we make, we'd all be like, what the? Like, no.
It would be very different
shows. It wouldn't be funny. It wouldn't be sexy. But then we put in people with, like, you know, like who look
beard.
Like us and and, you know, we have to like shave twice a day already and, you know, it's like it's just not fair to anybody.
Yeah,
you know, it's just it's not.
Yeah, it is messed up to know that the people who 13-year-olds are idolizing are actually 20, and it's also weird for them to be playing a 16-year-old
and walking into bars ordering like dirty martinis and not having any issues with that at all, being like, it's my 15th
birthday.
It's
like James Bond.
It's so weird.
They're like, I'll have a scotch. I killed a man.
Yeah. Like, and there's no question from these people, like, at all. There's no card.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You didn't meet on Gossip. We actually were asking Penn about this.
And he had
a memory unlocked.
I don't think about it hardly ever, but then I'm like, oh, Hellaburger.
Hellaburger.
Well, actually, it's called Drive-Thru now.
I was wondering which title you were going to shout just now. And I'm really glad that was the one.
Hellaburger. Da, 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 da. They should, man. So
we should get that clean.
So for the listener, we did a real B grade horror together, and it wasn't that long before Gossip Girl, was it?
I want to say maybe a year.
Yeah, a year, yeah. Maybe a year and a half or two at most. But it was like it was on the cusp.
Yeah,
I still had my really long hair.
It's so funny. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen it.
I don't think I have either.
Yeah, I
I've
would
seen
like
clips.
To. Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen clips. Like, of like, there's a Ouija board scene.
Mm-hmm. You're decapitated. Spoiler, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, spoiler, spoiler. No. I'm cut in the middle, in the half.
Okay.
I'm cut in fully half.
Let's be clear.
Like,
so what
at
is
my
that
waist.
Called?
Like, and a, then, like a magic joke?
No, and then my body, my torso slides off of my legs.
Oh, right on.
And that was interesting.
I have to ask, since you guys did that and then Gossip Girl, do you remember your first impressions of each other, and did they change when you sort of came together for...
Did I meet you for the first time on that movie, or did we meet before? Because I do recall, I think I was at a party at your house once.
Mm. Interesting.
not remember you, but...
I mean, I'm pretty sure we met on that movie.
I think I ended up
at like a Halloween party or something at your house. And I remember waiting in line for the bathroom and you turned around and I hadn't seen you with blonde hair. And I was like, oh, hey, right. But then Gossip Girl was not on the horizon. We didn't know we were going to work together later. And that's about the extent of it.
But then I must have invited you to the party.
No, I think I was there with
a
friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is really funny.
I know. It's the vaguest memory I have.
So the headline is like, Penn not memorable to Leighton at all.
Yeah.
Stop it. No.
That's fair.
No, not
Click
at all.
Click through. That's the link.
Yeah. One aspect of the podcast that we sometimes explore is around like relationships, like things that you thought in middle school versus now. And I actually have a really sweet story about your husband, Adam. For those of you who don't know, Adam Brody. My dad... had a small role in a movie that Adam was the star of that shot in Puerto Rico. And it's called Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
And I think my dad was like a toilet paper salesman that he had to like make a pitch to. Anyway, so my sister and I were visiting Puerto Rico at the time and my dad was like really excited for us to come on set. Anyway, so long story short, my sister and I are like super excited to go on set as well. We were fans of the OC, so we like knew who Adam was. We knew he was the star of the movie. And when we get there, they wouldn't let us on. And my dad had, like, done all the clearances and protocols, and for whatever reason, they wouldn't let us come on set. And Adam overheard my dad talking on the phone to someone in security, like, trying to get us on. And he's like, what's happening? And my dad told him, and he's like, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And he got us on the set, and then he gave us a tour. And I remember being, like, really touched by that, because he was the star of the movie. My dad had, like, the tiniest role. He, like, went out of his way to help this person and, like, give us a tour. And I've always really rooted for Adam's career ever since then.
That's just, so like, sweet.
Yeah. And so I wanted to just use that as a segue to hear about how sort of your impressions or thoughts of what marriage would be like, what a relationship would be like, have shifted now that you're actually like in that time of your life.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so sweet. That sounds right.
I have a picture too. I can show
you
later.
Oh my God, I want to see. Wow, I can't wait to tell him that. That's so nice. Yeah. I love that movie. Actually.
So my dad's the first shot, like the first face it opens on is my dad. Yeah.
In Puerto Rico. That's so nice. He ended up doing a show there. So we would live there for like half a year for the last 3 years. Yeah. It's so nice.
Amazing.
That's so cool. That's so sweet. He's sweet. It just occurred to me. He's really sweet.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy.
I have been with for 8 years.
I love that guy.
Years,
he's also kind of handsome.
Yeah.
So to bring up DaVita again.
She's at the center of every story
in this
here.
Show,
she does.
By the way, for reference, DaVita was a friend of mine later in LA.
Okay, yeah. So we knew each other in middle school. Then she moved here. Then I moved here. And then weirdly, we both moved to New York and then back to LA all at the same period. So we've always lived in the same town for the most part. Maybe we were 16 or 17. I forget when this would have been. But she had Adam's picture as her screensaver.
Oh my gosh.
So I remember seeing it being like, who's that? And she's like, oh, like she told me about it. And I was like, oh, okay. So like his face, this is my consciousness since like this age.
Wow.
And it's funny because like I never watched the show. Nothing against it. Clearly I married the guy in it. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just so funny to look back and be like, that was the first time I ever like saw his face. And I can remember, you know, a picture of him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
did he look great?
Yeah. Yeah. He looked the same. He's aged nicely.
I feel like he has looked the same for 20 years.
Yeah, better. He's looking better.
Probably. That's I haven't seen him recently.
And yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I ever saw him.
Mm.
Saw him.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a picture of him on my friend's computer.
Yeah,
and I think that she had different people's faces at times on her screensaver. And then, like, I remember doing Spin the Bottle with DaVita and being like—
And a picture of Adam.
And a picture of Adam.
That's as far as I'll go.
Practicing. Yeah. But yeah, like having, like, you know, and being like, no, this is degrading. We're not doing this. We're not going to kiss boys because the bottle's telling us, you know.
Years later, it's just a different kind of bottle.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, as far as like a relationship, you know, when you're young, it's exactly what we were talking about before, which is like, don't invalidate the depth of my feelings.
Yeah.
Like, it's so passionate, so important, you know. And when you do think of like love before, like the what you think of as like a relationship and love, it's like, it's not. I mean, I know that I got very lucky to like know and meet. I met Adam when we first started Gossip Girl. I met him when, you know, I think we were out here for like the upfronts, or not upfronts, but one of those kind of press things, like before the first season started. So I met him then. And then, you know, didn't date him all that time.
Did you make him your screensaver?
No. I did a long game sort of ignoring him for 5 years and I got him.
Always
so that's
works.
The way. It does.
Disclaimer, it doesn't work. Don't.
Don't play mind games. But as far as like when I think about guys that I liked in high school or like what I was interested in then or the fantasy of that, it was all so innocent. And then when I was actually in relationships, I didn't really know what to do. I was just like, you know, I think I thought about catering to the guy that I was with and like what would make him happy, and then still having some sort of like inner strength to be like, no, I'm gonna be strong. And I remember every comment that like a guy, whether I was dating him or had a crush on him, would like say to me about like a comment about my body or just comments about anything.
You.
Like it stays about me, about my, you know, white trash family, about whatever. Mm-hmm. Like certainly like I can remember and recall. And I think like also I do recall the positive things that were said to me, maybe not by like boyfriends, but just like by people I worked with or by friends or by teachers. Like those things stuck with me. Things that I felt like, oh, I am good. I am like special, you know? And boy, is that an annoying thing for our parent generation to be like, everyone thinks they're special.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, no, we are. And I want everyone to think that. But this is not fishing for anything. But I have never really felt that way about anything. I've never felt like, oh, I belong here, you know. I always have that feeling of like, I don't. And I don't think that that is something that I think some people have that because like of unconditional love.
There's a thing I've heard about that's called unconditional love.
No, but I'm serious. Like that is, I think, where people who feel a sense of belonging, they're receiving some kind of unconditional love from somewhere.
It's true. Yeah. And I think that's pretty rare. I mean, what I would say is that most people... I think actually, maybe it's not rare. Most people actually feel like their parents love them. And
I have this conversation a lot with my wife. Like, what do you guys think? Because I think I have my own thoughts about that. But like, I'm really curious because these two have not perfect, but they have very, what I see as healthy relationships with their parents.
I can see that.
You know.
I can sense that.
Yeah. I had dinner with my dad last night.
Yeah! So
you can, like, predict, I met Tommy. You can comment on it. Yeah.
And I'm curious what you guys think.
Yeah.
I have
two thoughts. I hope that for most people they do sort of have that foundation of like family and that stability that comes with the feeling that you have unconditional love. I think it's so crucial to stability and like a sense of self. My other thought is that in the industry, in like Hollywood, there seems to be a large number of people who have challenging relationships with their parents.
I given you that impression?
Never.
Whatever, did I?
But I think it's a little bit skewed. So I feel like if you're in Hollywood or if you're like, if that's the environment that you're in most of the time, there might be a feeling that that's really common. But I think it's less common for people whose parents are like bankers or accountants or who are just in another arena of life.
I was just telling my mom yesterday, because for whatever reason, I'm known for among my friends for having a really close relationship with my parents. But especially to my mom, we talk all the time and we're very close. And someone was asking me, they have kids, and they were like, how did she do it? And my mom always gives this like canned answer of like, I laid down with my kids at night. And I was like, Mom, I don't think like that's it. I don't think that's the thing. If it was that easy, lots of people would have closer relationships with their kids. And I was really thinking about it. And I think my mom just wanted to be around us, her kids, so genuinely. She just enjoyed being around us. And we felt that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's hard. Being a parent can be really challenging and you're exhausted. And I don't think everybody does naturally feel that way, that they're just like so enthused by everything that their kid has to say or they want to know their kid really well. And my mom, just that was just a natural thing for her. But I think that's not common, is what I was
going to say. I have to say, I grew up in Puerto Rico, and I think in Puerto Rican culture, family is like a huge, it's more important than work. And like in Puerto Rican culture, people will talk a lot about Americans live to work, but we work to live. Mm. That's like an expression that it's probably common, but I used to hear my Puerto Rican friends say it a lot.
Why they gotta bring us down like that?
I know. Right? And they would say it to me, who's like half American, so I was like, But my friends all had really close relationships with their parents. Like, and I feel like culturally it's a thing. Like, and people feel secure in their relationships with their families. I'm probably statistically wrong, but...
Yeah, it's funny. I just did a movie in Croatia and truly, like, even the hours that people work, that they're just like, no, we'll be done at 7. And then we're all going to go get dinner. And just come back at like 8 tomorrow, you know, and you got all the same work done. And in Puerto Rico, I actually noticed is like very family friendly, very like family oriented. Like every corner has a playground and every bar and restaurant like has high chairs and people who are like, let me hold that baby. Let me raise that baby. Leave that baby with me. And every like older child on a playground is like, give me that baby.
That is great. I feel like when you see children so accustomed to babies, like that is something healthy is happening there. We don't have that here.
Not at all. I mean, like, it's funny because, like, I feel like I live and, like, am raising my family in a small community. And then I went to some grocery store outside of the community. And this woman was standing at the cashier with her baby in a cart or, like, baby in a stroller and was like, oh, God, I forgot something. Okay, you can check me out and then I'll go back through. I was like, I can just stand here and watch your baby for you if you want. And she looked at me like, like, she's you're like going to steal my baby.
Are you going to kidnap my baby?
Like, yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, the world doesn't operate like that. Mm. And I'm not saying it has to be like that. And God, what a lofty, like, ridiculous thing for me to be like, people should be more communal with their baby. Mm. But, like,
no,
you know.
I think they should be.
I feel like that's the only – well, that's one of the few protections that we have. Like, I was talking to my brother the other day. He has a 2.5-year-old. And he was like, we're thinking about leaving the country. And I was like, where would you go? And he was like, I don't know. We just like, I don't think we can be here. Both him and his wife were raised overseas. And now that they're raising this child, they're like, I don't know if we can be here. And I want to be like, you can do it. Like, you can create a community that guards against that. And I think that is the only way. You have to build up a community that can help support you. And
in Croatia, they have... When you have a baby, you take a year off, and then the dad can take a year off.
What? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's your amazing. Kid for 2 years.
We needed
years
a pandemic
a parent.
For that. Yeah. We needed a global exactly. health crisis for that.
Yeah.
I'm interested, personally. I'm interested these days. Do people have hope? What gives them hope? You know, where are we headed? You know, it's an important question regardless
well,
of how you
answer
it. I'm
here to tell
you. Leighton Meester, what do you think?
You guys have asked really tough questions. I have no answers.
It's just a show about crushes.
You've been answering them.
Middle school, right?
We swindled you.
We've not spoken about middle school at all. During the pandemic, it was truly like an intensive, the three of us on a ship, you know, together. Like, we didn't leave the house for so long, and we really did just spend that time with each other. And then when I went to have my baby, I wasn't able to like bring a doula or a midwife. I had Adam there, and it was so nice. It was so nice that it was just us. It was like everything we did and talked about and felt during that time was like us. Mm. And then, you know, the other part of the hopefulness to me kind of came out when when my daughter had not seen another child or another person and had, I'm sure, taken from us the sense of like, people are bad. Mm. You put up a mask and you walk on the other side of the street from them for a while. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then we finally were like, okay, she needs a friend. to play with. Mm-hmm. And our other friend and her children had been isolated, and we were like, let's get together. And it was like nothing had happened. They just are just spitting each other's mouths. And nobody.
Good old days.
Yeah. I miss spitting each other's mouths. I really do. I like think that every time I'm at like a restaurant, I'm like, just spit in my food. I just want it. Take down that. Just yell the menu. Just yell the specials at me into my water, and I'm gonna drink it. But like that, not missing a beat and just being like, yes, my friend, we play. Mm. And I think what I'm saying is through the eyes of a child, you do, much like Disney, as an adult, it is hell. if there's a child involved, boy, is it magical. Mm. And I guess that is the point of life. So here we are. The reason for living is children. That's the reason for my life. Mm. And I know that's not the case for everyone. But if you're looking for the meaning of life, just have a baby.
Or ask a baby.
Ask a baby. They know.
They'll just look at you.
No, but when we talked on the phone the other day, when we were talking about work, and you were like, I don't question anything, really. And I was like, I don't question anything because I'm like, well, I don't want to change anything about now. Isn't that the age old like time travel? Like, I wouldn't change anything. I really wouldn't. As fucked up as stuff has been, or how like whatever pain I had to go through, it, I am here now. And I think that for me, a perfect like litmus test of if I'm content or happy or whatever the expression, excited for my life is like, if everything is okay with my kids or my family, I'm like, it's okay. Everything's fine. I can like figure it out, and I can like unpack it and work on it, talk about it, deal with it. If I go to work and they're like, great scene or whatever it is, or I don't, they don't do that, but you know what I mean. They're like, you know,
everyone's clapping for Layton.
Everyone's clapping. No. And they're just like, look at you. It's so great.
You're so beautiful.
So special. Effortlessly. But if there's something like my kids, like something's off or like my something's off with my relationship or just something, then nothing's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. True. And so
it's our foundation.
Yeah.
That is like how you're doing, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's so true. It doesn't matter what kind of validation you get from the outside world. It might be good for like literally 15 minutes, you know. You go into an interview and they're
season 3. Doesn't it like make you your skin crawl when people are like, you've done so much. Like you are a musician, you have a podcast, you're an actor, and you're just like,
like the pressure.
It hurts. Like, isn't that such an annoying thing to say? I don't like it when people compliment me. I hate it.
And there we go. Back to the formative period. Layton, this is actually the question I want to end on in this.
Is that her question?
In this tone.
Are you stealing it from
question.
Me now?
Okay, go. Go. I was just going to segue really just like just crafting.
Well, we always ask people, if you could go back and be with young Layton, maybe 12 years old, 13 years old, what would you say to her?
I would say, oh, God. Yeah, I don't know. I've just stopped the room cold by being like, what's the answer? What the fuck is it? I don't know. I'd say a lot of things like, talk to yourself like you're your own best friend. That's a really annoying quote. You wouldn't say like, you suck, you fucked up that thing. I would just be like, no, you're doing your best, you know, or like, I'm here for you.
Actually, being your own friend is a deep one because at that age, it's you're your own worst critic.
Yeah,
it's the beginning of being your own worst critic, and maybe it never stops.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
If you have great parents, I think maybe.
No.
Layton, this has been amazing. Thank you for your time and the generosity. Really.
It's great to see you.
It's great to see you too. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Is any of this usable?
We'll see. We'll have to go back. You know, listen through. You know what I like the most?
Please.
How she pronounced Timothée Chalamet. She said Timothée Chalamet.
Instead of Timothy.
It was like kind of like lazy, and it was like Timothée because the accent is on that. on le premier A. Is it?
Like Sophie said at the beginning, I also was really struck by how down to earth Layton was.
But I can't help but keep thinking that the subtext is that I'm not. Is that
really?
What does that mean about?
I mean, Penn, you have been a celebrity your entire life, so you don't know this. But most everyday normal people think about celebrities
are not
as
famous?
Like larger than life. You know, yeah. Also, that they're not famous.
Mm-hmm. You don't have acolytes just trailing.
Hopefully
you.
Hopefully, after this. Podcast.
Sorry. Yeah, we better with this. I mean,
but Penn, maybe little bits like that is why we don't think of you as down to earth.
Yeah. That's, print it. Let's move on. Sorry. Go on.
No. Okay. Here's what I really loved about this recording experience was honestly watching you and Layton together. Like, I really felt the friendship. You know, I don't know how like in touch you guys have been over the years, but the whole interview was feeling like happy that you guys were together.
Oh,
that's really
nice.
How I felt. I was just like, I'm so happy that Penn and Layton are together right now and that they have this like comfort between them. It was really sweet to see you together. And I don't think this will make it into the edit, but Penn and Layton showed each other pictures of their babies and they sort of caught up on these aspects of life that are so important. And it was really nice to witness that.
I really loved when Layton opened up about some comments she's had working in the industry for so long that seemed like, you know, on the scale of things, relatively innocuous, like comments about her body or her appearance. But she's also hilarious. Can I change my favorite part? My favorite part was when
this is live.
She said she wanted the waiter to spit in her mouth. Laughed so hard.
Wait, I don't remember that
part.
She's like, spit in my mouth. Just do it. Spit in my mouth.
And I want to drink it. Like she just kept going.
I have complete amnesia here. we can probably, how are we going to get out of this? How are we going to get out of this glass box of... all I'm going to do on this show is reference my shows.
Yeah, please do.
I'm only going to be dismissive of them in press, but on my show, I'm just gonna cash in. Now that I've got my own show, I'm just like, yeah, you guys like Gossip Girl? Yeah, you guys like you? Come on in. Come on, going to give you more content.
I will kidnap you, Twitter user 24.
Glass box of gossip.
I think we're out.
Yeah,
we're
out.
That's good.
All right, bye.
You can see Leighton Meester in episodes of How I Met Your Father on Hulu, and you can also keep up with her on Instagram at It's Me Leighton. Podcrushed is hosted by Penn Badgley, Nava Kavalin, and Sophie Ansari.
Our executive producer is Nora Ritchie from Stitcher.
Our lead producer and editor is David Ansari.
Our secondary editor is Sharaf Entwistle.
Special thanks to Peter Clowney, VP of Content at Stitcher, Eric Eddings, Director of Lifestyle Programming at Stitcher, Jared O'Connell and Brendan Brines for the tech support, and Shruti Marate, who transcribes our tape.
Podcrush was created by Nava Kavalin and is executive produced by Penn Badgley and Nava Kavalin and produced by Sophie Ansari. This podcast is a Ninth Moon production. Be sure to subscribe to Podcrush. You can find us on Stitcher, the SiriusXM app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If you'd like to submit a middle school story, go to podcrush.com and give us every detail.
And while you're online, be sure to follow us on socials, or we're telling everyone that your mom still walks you to the bus stop. You don't want that. It's at Podcrush, spelled how it sounds, and our personals are at Penn Badgley, at Nava, that's Nava with three N's, and at Scribble by Sophie. And we're out. See you next week. Bye. Feel free to jump in, like, mm-hmm. like I think we can play with each other.
Sure, sure.
Be sure to subscribe to Podcrush.
Bitch.
Subscribe to Podcrush, bitch.
Stitcher.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.